It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hey, good morning. Happy Monday, everybody. It was a happy Monday. James Hamm there, Kyle Madsen here. We'll get to week four of the NFL. The 49ers and Raiders both got a couple of much-needed victories. The 49ers at home, 30-13 over the New England Patriots. The Raiders held on. Well, came back and then held on to beat the Browns at Allegiant Stadium, 20-16. But before we get to that, some sad news in the NBA world this morning. Dikembe Mutombo has died at the age of 58 from brain cancer. It was announced in October of 2022 that he was going to have surgery to treat brain cancer, and he has succumbed to that at the age of 58. A Hall of Famer, an 8-time All-Star, 3-time All-NBA selection, 6-time All-Defense, 4-time Defensive Player of the Year, 3-time Blocks Leader, 2-time Rebound Leader. He was a 91-92 All-Rookie Team member. Those are his NBA accolades, and they pale in comparison to his humanitarian accolades, which I started to make a list. And then it was like, literally, we'll spend the whole show talking about all the things he did as a humanitarian. Just an incredible person, an incredible life, and gone too soon at age 58, Dikembe Mutombo.
Yeah, absolutely devastating for the NBA. And you know what? For the world as a whole, Dikembe Mutombo was someone who took his fame and understood that he was a basketball player that could impact the world in a different way. And his work to build hospitals, to bring basketball to places that really, you know, would never have had an opportunity without him. Mm-hmm. You know, his finger wag was well known. But more than that, just a great humanitarian, mm-hmm. and the world lost a good one. And I'll say this, Kyle, like growing up here, there are two things that we got to watch. On Saturday, everyone had to watch Notre Dame football on NBC. For whatever reason, we had to watch Lou Holt run up and down the field yelling at his players, and we watched Notre Dame football, and on CBS, we had Georgetown basketball, and I grew up watching him and Alonzo Mourning playing side by side, the Twin Towers for John Thompson at Georgetown, and he was a marvel, just an absolutely sweet human being, a spectacular person off the court, and a great basketball player as well.
Yeah, he was the first player that, as a kid, because I wasn't around for like early Dikembe. I remember him very. With the Sixers and the Nets, like kind of later in his career, the Atlanta a little bit as well, Houston, like that's kind of when I start to remember Dikembe. He was just the first player as a kid that I just associated with defense.
Mm-hmm.
Like if somebody on the playground blocked somebody, it's like you were doing the finger wag, and that was it. Here in Northern California.
Oh yeah,
and that was just kind of the impact he had across the world. What a person. What a player. And Dikembe Mutombo, gone at age 58. So some sad news to start the day. But I will do my best today. If I see anybody trying to throw something in the garbage, I'm going to
swat it.
Let them know.
Yeah.
Let them know what time it is.
That's right.
All right. Let's talk some NFL football here on the Insiders. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Kings Media Day today, by the way. So James is here until 11. And then he's going to dip to go to Media Day to bring you all the best coverage of what's happening with the Kings as they get ready for training camp, which begins tomorrow. Right? Tomorrow? Tuesday?
Yeah, training camp starts tomorrow.
Golly.
Like, away we go.
It felt like the NBA season was so far away 2 weeks ago.
Uh-uh.
And now it is right here, and it begins with Media Day. So we'll talk about that coming up in a bit. But let's start... with the San Francisco 49ers bounce back in a big way. They beat the Patriots 30-13 at Levi's Stadium. And I'm a little bit torn here because what we watched Sunday at Levi's Stadium was just a good team destroying a bad team. That's what it was. And at the same time, it felt a little bit like, man, they left some meat on the bone,
mm-hmm.
Especially offensively. But the bigger deal for me yesterday was this was an opportunity, a big opportunity for the 49ers defense to bounce back. They have been, we talked about it last week. The Christian McCaffrey injury matters, but it doesn't matter as much as what the hell is happening with the Niners defense. They can't get a stop when they need it against the Vikings. They can't get a stop when they need it against the Rams. They look like they're in shambles. And then you've got injuries on that side of the ball. Javon Hargrave going out's a big deal. They needed a good performance on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Flat out. Because if you're not playing well defensively against this Patriots team, I don't know who you're going to play well against. So, all that said, this was a really good jumping off point for the Niners defense to kind of turn its season around. I thought they were good in all three levels yesterday and really kind of put the clamps on an offense that they should have put the clamps on.
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost, the Patriots, while they're not good, they can run the ball. We do have some breaking news. Oh. I don't know if you've seen this.
I haven't. I don't even have Twitter up.
The San Francisco Giants have fired Farhan Zaidi. He is out as president of basketball operations.
Baseball?
Yeah. So Susan Slusser was first with the news. Pretty like out of nowhere.
They had to.
Yeah.
It was going to be another offseason of, okay, wait, let's see. Let's try. The whole reason they added Farhan Zaidi to their front office was because he came from the Dodgers and the Oakland Athletics.
Yep.
And it initially looked like they wanted to turn into the Dodgers, right? Where they were going to spend big money on all these free agents. They were going to have this super high payroll, but then they were going to be able to supplement that with these prospects that they were constantly churning out, because the Dodgers somehow trade all of they trade like six of their top 10 prospects every year, and every offseason wind up with the top farm system.
Mm-hmm.
Or a top five farm. It is unreal the way they have brought in player development and the way they have maneuvered in the trade market and in free agency to just build this juggernaut that, yeah, they only have the one World Series in 2020 in the shortened year, but they're competitive year in and year out. And instead, the Giants couldn't figure it out signing free agents. That might be an ownership problem with how much money they're willing to spend. And I think that is. I think ownership was less concerned about turning into the Dodgers and more concerned about turning into the Moneyball A's.
Yeah.
Where, hey, they don't have to spend big money to get players because they've got this farm system that's just constantly churning out. Maybe you sign a guy, a Blake Snell here and a Matt Chapman there. But hey, you know what? It's going to mostly be their own guys. And now they have a not great farm system. None of these prospects that we've been hearing about for 3 years have come up and been impactful, save for Elliot Ramos, who is an all-star this year. Salute to him. But we never saw it. And they were save for the 107 wins, they have been a bland, boring, not fun baseball team. And I think that was just going to continue to be the case under Farhan Zaidi. He wasn't the guy.
No, he wasn't the guy. And the second paragraph of the news release from the San Francisco Giants: as we look ahead, I'm excited to share that Buster Posey will now take a greater role as the new president of basketball operations. So there you have it.
Who's that?
Buster Posey.
Huh. In the interim, or they're hiring him? I think he said basketball again, by the way.
I said basketball again?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Basketball's on the brain, dog.
It is.
All
it
good.
It is on the brain. As we look ahead, I'm excited to share that Buster Posey will take on a greater role as the new president of baseball operations. There we go.
Sure, man. I guess. We'll see.
Yeah.
I can't tell. I don't know. And again, we'll get back to the NFL shortly here, but I don't know if that is Buster came in this year. He was an advisor. He helped get the Matt Chapman extension done. Like, this is a guy with some clout, and he's going to be able to get the players to sign here that we have not been able to sign. Or if this is you know what? The organization needs a win, and there may not be a player in Giants history with a higher Q rating than Buster Posey, so we're going to make him the face.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's what this is.
No, I honestly think so, too. And, like, talk about a quick turn. Like, hey, one guy's out, new guy's in. Yeah. Next!
Not even going to go through a hiring process.
Nope.
Especially, it's got to be especially hard for the Giants, who let Scott Harris walk to go to Detroit, and you're watching Detroit have this incredible second-half turnaround after the trade deadline, by the way, where they didn't make any major moves. They traded Jack Flaherty, their second-best pitcher. And all of a sudden, you have this Tigers team that is young and fun, and they're bringing up prospects, and they're making the playoffs. They're doing exactly what the Giants could have done with a GM who was in the Giants building.
Yeah.
Whew. That's a bad beat.
Yikes.
That's a bad beat. Farhan Zaidi out as the San Francisco Giants president of baseball operations. Buster Posey is being hired in his place. We'll see how that goes this offseason. Fascinating times in down there in
San Francisco. Yeah.
All right.
All right, let's get back to it.
Yeah, back to the Niners. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Jiffy Lube sponsors the show. We're the Insiders. We're hanging out with you till noon. James going to dip at 11 today to get down to Kings Media Day. We'll have all the coverage of that for you on social media. And, of course, here on ESPN 1320, D'Lo and KC will have some coverage of it. We'll be talking about it tomorrow. Best Kings Talk in Sacramento is going to be right here on ESPN 1320 as this season starts with Media Day today and training camp beginning tomorrow. All right, so the 49ers, we're talking about the defensive bounce back. And I believe you were talking about what they did defensively against a bad Patriots offense. Like, to me, that's just what you needed to see.
No, totally. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, for me, like, New England came in, and while they're not good, their quarterback play hasn't been good. They're running the ball really well, mm-hmm. like, throughout the season. The Niners shut off that faucet, and then normally if you're going to shut down one faucet, you're going to say, okay, we're going to make, like what we talked about in our keys, we're going to make Brissett beat you, mm-hmm. right? Or May, or whoever they decide to throw out at quarterback. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole nother story for another day. Well, they not only took away the run, they held them to just 73 yards on 24 carries, right? Mm-hmm. So 3 yards a carry. But they pressured the quarterback like crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, they were all over Brissett.
Yeah.
And I thought just a very, very impressive overall performance by the defense where, you know, what you said, like you said, all three phases against a team that realistically you should manhandle.
Yeah, and that's why I don't want this to come across like, oh, the Niners defense has figured it out. They're top five. I don't think they have the personnel to be a top five defense this year.
Okay.
I don't. But you have to start by beating the hell out of a bad offense. And it's like, okay, at least they're not so bad that this Patriots team is going to go hang up 20 plus on them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not that bad. The one touchdown the Patriots did score came because Isaac Arendo fumbled the second half kickoff.
Yep.
And they needed to go 27 yards to the end zone. And even that, I think, took them like seven plays. So they went 3.5 yards per play. Like, you go look, then they ran two more plays than the 49ers did. The Patriots. They ran Wow. two more plays than the Niners did, and the Niners outgained them by 215 yards.
Oof, that's a good stat.
It was just they beat the hell out of a bad team.
Yep.
And if you're looking for a team that is sliding a little bit, you lose to a Minnesota team that might just be the best team in the NFC. Apparently.
Might be the best team in football.
Like, it's unbelievable.
I don't know what's happening. Like,
they were
Sam
so good.
Darnold, you know, for president.
Yeah, they and I think the Packers are good too. The way they came back yesterday against Minnesota, they couldn't ultimately complete that comeback, but they made a blowout close in the second half. So you have the tough game against Minnesota where you feel like you want a couple of plays back and maybe you win that game, but then you go and you have that collapse against the Rams and you're it's just, this is death spiral time. So it's a get-right game against New England, and they got right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does that translate against Kyler Murray and Marvin Harrison Jr. and Trey McBride and the Cardinals? Well, no, maybe. But you got to start somewhere, right? We at least know where the basement is, and it's not giving up a bunch of points to this version of the Patriots.
Yeah.
And they got contributions from Nick Bosa was outstanding yesterday. Pro Football Focus credited him with 7 quarterback pressures, 1 quarterback hit, a sack. Of course, he had 5 hurries. Where he was just in the backfield so often.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of game you kind of wanted from him. He eventually got the sack, the strip sack, and the fumble recovery. It's kind of an unbelievable play individually. But I thought Kevin Givens was awesome yesterday. Had 2.5 sacks in the second quarter after having 5.5 in 60 games as a pro.
Yeah, before this season, he had 4.5 sacks in like 5 years.
Yeah, and he's up to 3.5 now this season.
Yeah, it's wild.
It's pretty incredible. So he had a great game. I thought Malik Collins spent a ton of time in the backfield. Sam Okwuanu, the random defensive end that they added this offseason as depth, had a pretty good little preseason, but winds up not making the team. They signed him to the practice squad. He was elevated last week against the Rams and had his first career full sack, pause. And then this week gets promoted to the active roster and goes out and has another really, really effective game. And this is where you start to see, okay, the 49ers defensive line is in a bad place. They weren't getting pressure on the quarterback with four, which is what they're supposed to do. They lose Javon Hargrave, one of their most effective pass rushers. How are they going to fill that void? And it's numbers, right? Mm-hmm. I have come to despise the term strength in numbers, but that's what this has to be. Nick Bosa has to dominate every game. Every game has to be like Sunday was.
Yeah.
And then you're going to need contributions just up and down the lineup. Some days it's going to be Kevin Givens. Some days it's going to be Okwuonu. Some days it's going to be Yuter Gross-Matos. Like, there's going to be different contributors every week, or there's going to have to be different contributors every week, or they're just going to start sliding back to where they were after week three.
Yeah, I totally agree. And when you have a bunch of injuries accumulate on the defensive line, it does become just like a next man up. Like, you just start throwing bodies at it. And I think that by having Bosa put pressure on the outside and having a lot of the attention go that way, it's opened up the middle for some of these guys who are truly taking advantage. This, you know, it feels like one of those seasons where you might be able to piece together something in the middle. Mm-hmm. And again, like, not only did they get pressure on the quarterback, but they did a really, really nice job of slowing the run. And that's a good run team. I mean, they did a really high quality job all around, which I didn't think that they really had in them, to be honest with you, at this point with so many injuries.
Yeah, that was my big concern for sure. Like, this is gonna, especially when they open the game, they get inside the Patriots 10 twice and come away with two field goals. Like, that is how you lose a game like this.
Mm-hmm.
You start out, you go two field goals on two trips into the red zone, even after a fumble, and you're going, okay, man, if they put together a long drive and they score, they're now ahead. Like, this could become a problem. And it just never really became a problem. Thanks in part to Fred Warner apparently just being the best defensive player on the planet.
He is by far the best defensive player on the planet. I don't even think it's close. What we're seeing from him is just so next level.
He's been good for so long.
Yeah,
and this year, it's like, man, he's the only reason they didn't get blown out by the Vikings, because he had an interception in the red zone and then he punched the ball away from Aaron Jones at the goal line.
Mm-hmm.
He has the pick six yesterday, which I don't want to say it didn't win him the game, but after that pick six, it was like, okay, they're in cruise control now. Like, they're not going to lose this game after Fred Warner snags his second interception of the year and takes it to the house, puts the Niners up 13-0. That just kind of flipped the tide. Okay, hey, the Patriots are going to need to put together a couple of drives to go win this game, and that's if the Niners just don't score again. So that was, he has not only been just individually great, he's been such a stabilizing force for a defense that needs it. And the defensive line was really good yesterday, but man, he was awful against the Rams, and then comes out in the first half, didn't even play the second half, comes out in the first half yesterday, seven tackles, second most on the team, an interception that he returned for a touchdown, just an unbelievable individual effort from, I think, if you're doing defensive player of the year odds, he's got to be up there.
Oh, yeah. Right now, he looks like the odds-on favorite. I mean, he's been so incredible. Yeah, just very, very
looking
impressive.
Looking up the odds right now.
Yeah. For me, I mean, you're going to have a couple of guys like Watt's going to be in the conversation. Aiden Hutchinson, who's got a bunch of sacks. But he's a guy who you've got to have in the conversation. I mean, and it's not just like the big plays. It's the big plays in specific moments that you need someone to change the tenor of a game, and for him to be able to read a quarterback, and the two interceptions he's had are both just absolutely wild.
Just ridiculous play.
And then the fact that he got a pick six, watching him ramble down the sidelines. As someone who has independent defensive players, individual defensive players in his fantasy league, and Fred Warner is on his team, you're sitting there cheering the whole time like, come on, little fella, get in there. You can do it. You can do it.
Well, it was also because I wasn't totally sure. I'm looking at Defensive Player of the Year odds right now. This is live from BetMGM. Fred Warner is plus 2,000. He's behind Max Crosby at plus 1,800. Miles Garrett at plus 1,300. Chris Jones at plus 1,200. Nick Bosa at plus 1,000. Aiden Hutchinson plus 325. TJ Watt plus 325.
Yeah. You might want to...
I might... Yeah, you might sprinkle a little cheese.
Like, go there, yeah, like, place a little bet.
Plus $2,000. Let's see. Bet 100, win 2,000. Fred Warner's a DPOY. It's so hard to win Defensive Player of the Year, though, as a non-pass rusher, because sacks and affecting the quarterback just matter so much now.
Yeah.
So I Warner would have to be superhuman like this all year. You need a primetime game where he has like a pick six. His forced fumbles would need to reach a point of becoming a national story. Like, you have to work your way into the discussion.
Yeah.
And defensive ends right now are just always going to have that first. Like, they're always going to be first in line for stuff like defensive player of the year. But, man, if a non-defensive end's going to win it, Fred Warner's making a hell of a case.
No, I truly believe he's in the conversation.
We'll put a brief pin in the Niner game because I do want to get to the Raiders. But real quick, before we do that, Brock Purdy's good, dude. I don't know how many times, I don't know why I feel the need to say this every week, because I think there's more people coming around, but this is not Jimmy Garoppolo point and shoot Niners offense. Mm. This is not, okay, in breaking route, he's just going to throw it blind and hope the receiver gets open behind the linebacker. Like, no, this is a quarterback who's reading the field, who's taking deep shots, who is extending plays. He threw 3 touchdowns on 1 drive yesterday.
Yeah.
Ridiculous how well he's playing. And we talked about this. We talk about this a lot. But the ability to just play the quarterback position and escape pressure, make good decisions. His interception was not a good decision. But no. We'll talk about that in a bit. But to mostly make good decisions, to just make the right play, to know when to take shots. He's playing at a really high level. Is he ever going to be Patrick Mahomes and throw for 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns? Probably not. But he's going to give them a chance to win a lot of games.
I think he can throw for 5,000 yards in a 17-game season. He's on pace to do that. I mean, he's at 1,100 yards. He leads the NFL in passing yards right now. Mm. I don't think he can get the 40, 50 touchdowns. Just because that's not their offense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, what I like about him is that he doesn't fear like throwing to the next level.
Yeah.
And not only that, but if you look at this game specifically, Juwan Jennings had a 45-yard catch. Deebo Samuel had a 53-yard catch.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon Ayuk had a 38-yard catch. Jordan Mason had a 24-yarder. Kittle had the 15-yarder, but that was even like in the back corner of the end zone,
yeah,
like up and over the top. It was more like a 30-yard pass or a 28-yard pass.
Mm-hmm. Jennings had a 32-yarder as well.
Yeah. So what I like is that like he's pushing the envelope and he's stretching the defense the entire time, which again is going to open up the running lanes for McCaffrey or for Mason. McCaffrey when he gets back, but Mason right now who's just running wild.
Yeah.
So I love his composure. I love that, like, even in this game, he moved all over the pocket. He was scrambling like crazy, and, you know, they showed one play from the week before, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he ran 77 yards on one play.
Ridiculous.
For, like, a 8-yard gain.
Yeah.
But 77 yards, like, all the way back across the field, all the way back.
Ridiculous.
He's showing an ability to be more than just a guy who stands in the pocket. He's showing more than just he's not a quote-unquote running quarterback as much as he is a scrambling quarterback and still has the ability to make the big throw.
I'm not comparing him to this player, so please don't. Like, he has so many steps to get, and I don't know if he'll ever get there to the level of this player, but please follow. He's not this player. It just reminds me of this player in this very one specific way. He scrambles like Aaron Rodgers.
Mm.
Like, prime Aaron Rodgers was never going to beat you with a 100-yard rushing game, but, man, he was going to be a pain in the ass to get down in the pocket.
Yeah.
And man, when he got outside and it was a 3rd and 4, he's getting 5.
And he did that this weekend.
Yeah, he did it twice on the first drive.
Yeah.
So that's where I think he's just a pain in the ass for defenses because he said it yesterday, I'm just athletic enough. Like, that's what it is. He has a high football IQ and he has just enough athleticism on 3rd and 4. Hey, get you 5.
Yeah.
You need him to go beat Lamar Jackson, Paul? No, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Are they going to run a bunch of zone read stuff? No. But a little scramble drill.
Mm. I like it, man. I like too. How he's developing every game. He's becoming better and better.
Yep.
And I think that's people forget that last season he came into the year and it had major elbow surgery during the offseason.
Yeah.
And so we're watching the next progression of a healthy quarterback who's getting more and more competent at the job and finding new ways to beat teams.
Yeah. Speaking of finding new ways to beat teams, the Raiders beat the Browns 20-16 yesterday. Impressive for I know the Browns offense isn't good, But no Max Crosby, no Malcolm Kuntz. The fact that they held the Browns to 10 offensive points, that is crazy impressive, especially on the heels of getting blown out by the Panthers. And then you go down 10-0 against that team in a spot where no Davante Adams, no Max Crosby. They could have punted. They could have gone, hey, you know what? Done this week. 10-0, our two best guys out. Nah. But the fact that they had such a dreadful performance against the Panthers, and you have Antonio Pierce going, guys made business decisions. Like, we'll deal with that on Monday. And then they come out, and in this game against the Browns, come out a little flat. You fall behind 10-0. That's not great. But the fact that they battle back and go up 20-10, and they had the, you know, the fluky fumble return for a touchdown at the end, but mostly dominated that game after the first quarter. Just a really impressive, gritty win for a Raiders team that was, you know, if we're going to call the Niners shorthanded last week, the Raiders super shorthanded this week.
Yeah, I think I sent you a text early on that like the Raiders look like they're going to get torn up by Andy Dalton and Deshaun Watson in back-to-back weeks.
Yeah.
And then they didn't. They settled in. They really did show some like maturity as a team, which I didn't think they had. And then they got back to the ground game, which I thought they were really good on the ground, which is something they have not been good at all season long. But you had Madison with 60 yards. You had Zamir White with 60 yards. You had then a bunch of other guys, just random guys picking up yards, but they rushed for 152 yards and 29 carries and two touchdowns. And that, to me, was like a huge, especially against a defense that's that good, to be able to get out there and rush and not put the ball in Gardner Minshew's hands to win or lose. Because the week before, I think he lost. This week, it looked like he was more like ready to game manage and just, you know, get a good, solid victory.
Yeah, and I love getting creative, too. Offensive coordinator Luke Getsy just knows that, okay, running with Zamir White and running with Alexander Mattison hasn't worked. So how do you get the ball in Brock Bowers' hands? You give him a rush. You know, I love that that, was it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different players? Seven if you count Gardner Minshew, but yeah. I'm not. 6 different players get carries. Like, that's how you start to figure out your run game. Because you can't, you just can't be one-dimensional, especially against a Jim Schwartz defense. It's very, very good, like you said. Gutsy performance, man.
Yeah, definitely.
Super easy spot to just quit.
Yeah.
And they didn't. So all credit to them. And honestly, like, what this season is about for Vegas for me is, can you hang around?
Mm-hmm.
And you get the Broncos next week. All right, that's a winnable game. You're home against Pittsburgh. All right, that'll be tough, but not the end of the world. Not world beaters out there.
They're not as good as their record.
They're at the Rams. You're going to have a heavy Raider fan contingent at SoFi Stadium, and the Rams not playing great right now. Kansas City, who knows with Kansas City? So that's where you start to stack this up, and you go, man, if they can just hang around, they could put themselves in a position where you're playing Atlanta, Jacksonville, New Orleans, and the Chargers to end the year with a chance to really make a run at a playoff spot.
Yeah.
So can you hang around for now, especially in a game where there's no Davante Adams and there's no Max Crosby, and you can go sneak out a win? That's big time.
Yeah.
That's big time by the Raiders. We got to go. Well, we don't have to go. We're still here. We have to pay some bills.
Yep.
We would like you to stick around. We'll have more, a little more NFL stuff coming up, but a huge trade came down over the weekend in the NBA. We got to talk about it and how it impacts the Sacramento Kings' chances to climb up the rankings in the West. We'll discuss that next on ESPN 1320, Sacramento's sports leader, as I vamp to push buttons. Here we go.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
A little distracted by Braves Mets, but, you know, who isn't? Watch parties all over Sacramento for the Braves Mets doubleheader.
Hey, shout out to my guy Pete Youngman, who's a huge Mets fan.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Good luck with that, Pete.
Sorry, Pete.
He's also a huge Kansas City Chiefs fan, so he's been living...
Oh, then he's fine.
Basking
he's fine.
In the glow of Chiefs Super Bowl wins.
Yeah. They don't look good right now, and I still feel like I have to pick them to win the Super Bowl.
They're 4-0, and they don't look good at all.
They look just like they if you could talk me into like 6 plays being different in those 4 games and the Chiefs being 0-4. I hate just
You know what's crazy too is
so good at winning.
We were
so
talking. That's the thing. Mahomes is so good at winning. We're talking about this earlier. Like my fantasy team with Mahomes is somehow, you know, well, we got our first win, but we're 1-3, and a lot of it is because Mahomes has been so bad. Like he came into the week as like the 14th highest scoring quarterback, and it got worse. He scored like 12 points, and then he goes out there, throws a pick. And then on the ensuing return, takes out his number one wide receiver.
And just brutal.
Appears to have blown out Rashi Rice's ACL.
Just brutal.
On a tackle.
Shout out to Rashi Rice, though, for getting back in the play and forcing a fumble.
Oh, yeah.
Unreal. Unreal play.
Absolutely wild.
I thought that only happened to the 49ers.
Huh?
they had plays. I think it might have been back-to-back years. Where they had an interception and the receiver ran him down. Roddy White did it, I think twice. I think both times it was Roddy White.
Oh.
Tracked down the Niners corner. One of them, I think it was it Dre Bly?
Oh, man.
I think Dre Bly was one of them, and then I think the other one was Nate Clements. And the Nate Clements one was in Atlanta.
Wow.
And all they had to do, they had intercepted Matt Ryan. All they had to do was sit down. Game was going to be over, but Clements tries to return it. Roddy White comes in, pops the ball out. Falcons recover. Matt Ryan hits a deep shot, and then they pause, and then they go in and score the game. A game-winning touchdown or kick the game-winning field goal. I forget which one, but yeah.
Yeah, it's tough.
So it's nice to see it happen to a team that wasn't San Francisco.
Mm.
Anyways, we'll put a pin in the NFL talk for a second because Friday night, just hanging out, enjoying the evening. You and I were talking about, we were discussing something. I forget what we were even texting about. But all of a sudden, the Timberwolves and Knicks made this massive trade 2 days before training camps are supposed to begin, or 3 days before training camps are supposed to begin.
Okay, so first of all, I want to start with this. A year ago, Kyle and I didn't know each other at all.
Yes.
Now, on a Friday night, we're texting about a wild trade with the Knicks and the Timberwolves.
Yeah, like 1,000%.
How quickly we've become like very, very good friends
that
text all the time. It's very strange.
Yeah, I just, it's like, dude, I got takes.
Yeah, being a radio like co-host with somebody is very different. I've never been in this world before.
Yeah.
Like all of a sudden you're like best friends. Or I guess there are people out there who are like mortal enemies, but I can't imagine that. That would be really difficult, but it happens all the time.
Yeah, it's just it's an odd thing because like I know I can be a lot, and we spend 2 hours a day together 5 days a week. It's like, God, you probably doesn't want to hear from me, but at the same time, it's like, man, we got stuff to go over, and we're going to talk about this anyway, so here's what I got. It's just, it's nice having somebody that I know is like also a sicko
who
cares about this on a Friday night.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just sitting there, you know, again, I was recovering still.
Of course, yeah.
I had done the show from home that day.
Surprised you were awake, to be honest.
Yeah, it's been a long, it was a long week last week. And then boom, like, and it comes across like right away, like, Carl Anthony Towns has been traded to the Knicks. And then it's like, oh? Or is about to be traded to the Knicks.
Legitimately one of those things where I went and looked, I double and triple checked the profile to make sure it wasn't fake.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Because September 28th?
Yeah.
Like, wait,
27th?
What?
Yeah.
What is this trade happening now for?
It was totally bizarre, totally weird. I walked into the other room and I told my son and his buddy that were sitting there like hanging out. I'm like, hey, looks like the Knicks are trading for Carl Anthony Towns. And it's like, oh. And then you see the deal and you're like, okay. And it's more complicated, right? So as of right now, the deal...
Yeah, what is the trade? We have not said what the trade is yet.
Okay, so as of right now, Carl Anthony Towns is on his way to the Knicks.
Yes.
The Knicks are trading Dante DiVincenzo and Julius Randle, along with the Detroit Pistons future first-round pick, which is pretty heavily protected. It's not like, hey, you're getting the number two pick in the draft, right? To Minnesota. But then it gets really complicated because the Knicks are over the second apron, and they're not allowed to take back more than goes out. So now they have to find a way to create something different, right? And they have a couple of players who are on their roster or who they have the rights to that may just like luck into the biggest payday of all time. So former Kings legend, DaQuan Jeffries.
Right? Obviously.
He is like the Knicks still have his bird rights. There's a possibility here that because the Knicks have to be at this trade has to be a net neutral trade, that they will have to find a third team that is willing.
Charlotte, apparently.
Well, Charlotte, but it may take a fourth team as well, because they may have to sign a player to an $8.5 million or $8.8 million deal and trade him, a sign and trade, and then that player. Like, again, this could be like DaQuan Jeffries could be sitting out there like, yeah,
they're just going to give me my money. DaQuan Jeffries, $8.8 million.
So they can complete the trade. And then but they're going to have to find a team that's willing to absorb $8.5 million. And you're going to have to give something up for that. So yeah. They're probably going to have to give up another first in order to get this trade done.
Oof.
And they have a boatload of firsts, but like maybe they've got some bad first down the road that they're like, okay, we'll throw in this. But very, very strange how this thing's working out. This happened one other time where a player, I want to say it was Keith Van Horn, got traded, even though he is retired, basically. He was part of a trade and made a bunch of money and then was waived when he got to the next spot.
Hell yeah.
But like, I don't know. Maybe DaQuan like picks up with Charlotte and gets to play with Charlotte. I don't know. DaQuan is a very good defensive player, and he's a very quiet guy. But I don't know. For me, it's
about like, to be rich as hell. Apparently,
it's possible
good for him.
Yeah,
hey, you know what? Salute to the Sacramento legend.
Yeah,
we're here to get paid, baby.
So
love it for him.
So on top of this, like this is one of the most earth-shattering trades because. What this does for Minnesota is it drops them below the second apron.
Yes.
And saves them a ton of money. And this looks like a cost-cutting move by the new ownership group. And Glenn Taylor is still there. And like A-Rod is there with his dude.
So much of what Minnesota had was vibes related.
Oh, yeah.
And based around vibes. Those dudes rocked with each other. And that matters. Like, that matters so much. We talk about the continuity with the Kings and how much continuity is going to be a factor for Sacramento this year.
Yep.
The Timberwolves had that. The Timberwolves just made the conference finals for the first time since, what, like 2002?
Mm-hmm.
Or 2003? However long it had been. They hadn't been to the conference finals in forever, and they finally make it, and their young superstar, Anthony Edwards, is 23 years old or however old he is, and he rocks with Karl Anthony Towns, and they just finally got Karl Anthony Towns in this spot where, okay, you know what, feels like he's finally in a spot where he can succeed and really help this team with Naz Reid, and it's Rudy Gobert, and Mike Conley, and Jaden McDaniels, and okay, they're cooking now. And they get Rob Dillingham in the draft. All right. Hey, this is just, hey, that's going to give them the scoring punch they need. Like, oh, hey, the Timberwolves are kind of cooking. And you pull the plug on that to make sure you're under the second apron. Pull the plug on that, by the way. Dante DiVincenzo can help them. Like, Dante DiVincenzo, to me, is just a winning player.
I think DiVincenzo and Julius Randle can both help them.
I don't know that Julius Randle can.
Okay. I mean, square peg, round hole.
Right. Which is I think is going to be a problem, especially when he's in like a contract year and he may not want to be there.
Yeah.
And this is where I talked about how so much of what Minnesota was doing was vibes based, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a bad thing. Like, that's just that's how it works sometimes. When you remove a piece like Karl Anthony Towns, who just became this beloved figure during their run last year.
Yeah.
When you go, hey, by the way, this guy who's been with the team his whole career, he's gone. Let's get Julius Randle. Like, man, what?
Yeah. I mean, it's really difficult, man. I don't know how this is all going to work out. And they're absorbing so much contract, the Knicks are, of Karl Anthony Towns. He's owed
a lot.
160, 220, 4 years, 220. Yeah, and to me, that's a lot for a guy who has a long, long history. But I do kind of like him in a stretch five, you know, with a bunch of defensive, long defensive players. I think that they've got something going there. I think he's a better natural number two scorer than any of the other guys that they had, than OG or Mikal Bridges.
Oh yeah, I initially thought this was a really lose-lose trade for both teams.
Yeah.
But I think what you're saying right now with how Towns fits with the Knicks, I think that can work a lot more than I think Julius Randle with the Timberwolves can work.
Yeah.
Oh, Julius Randle's a 33% career three-point shooter.
No. He doesn't mind hoisting them.
He had one season at 41.1%. The next season, 30.8%. The next season, 34.3% on 8 attempts a game. Last year, 31% on 5.3%. He only played 46 games.
Yeah.
I'm out on Julius Randle, dude.
No, you can totally be out. Player. And I'm also out on him and Rudy Gobert as a combo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really do. I think this hurts them because the other problem is that you don't have a way to start Dante DiVincenzo. So you're making this move, but you have Mike Conley and you have Ant-Man, you have Anthony Edwards in the backcourt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's not going to start. You even have Jaden McDaniels at the small forward.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they're going to move him over. I think this does open an opportunity for Naz Reid. Maybe it opens up an opportunity where Naz Reid starts and you bring Julius Randle off the bench as like a super sub and he scores a bunch of points. He does have a $31 million player option for next year, Randle does.
I think he opts in.
Yeah, probably.
Mm.
I don't know. He's probably going to ask for an extension.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure I'm giving it to him.
Well, if Naz Reid starts, that puts him in the front runner position for the sixth man of the year.
There you go.
That's right. Good spot for him.
That is.
Just start 82 games, put up a bunch of numbers, win that sixth man.
I'd say, too, the biggest thing for the Kings, why this matters for the Kings.
Please.
Is because the Kings opened the season against Minnesota, and this trade is not done. It's not done. Training camp opens like tomorrow for all these teams. Like, things are moving shaking. This could take 5 days, 6 days. Karl Anthony Towns can show up whenever he wants.
It's going to be awkward, dude. It's going to be, the vibes are going to be so bad with Minnesota. I know the Kings have got to figure out, we've talked about the fit with DeMar DeRozan. And
yeah.
I'm sure we'll talk about that more. They've got to figure that out for sure. But trying to figure it out while this is cool, this is something new, we could be really freaking good. Okay, how exactly is this all going to work?
Yeah.
That is so much different than hey, where's Carl?
Carl!
Carl! Hey, we don't want Julius, I guess. Here, fine. Good players, but what, three-time All-Star? I don't want to, this is not... And this is where I want this to be clear. I don't think Julius Randle stinks at basketball.
No.
I think it's a poorly timed trade, and I don't love the fit with Rudy Gobert. After it just seemed like Minnesota was, really trending the right direction with this group. They have this really solid foundation. They have this core that they really like. And then they just blew it up for no reason, except to get under the second apron.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's tough. It's a tough look, man.
Right, because I'm sorry, just real quick. This isn't basketball related, right?
No.
The Timberwolves don't believe they got better right now. There's no way.
I don't think so.
Okay.
No. I can't imagine they think they got better. I mean, there was always a possibility that they were going to trade Cat at some point.
Sure.
But this wasn't what you thought would make sense.
Well, right, and you can trade Cat. If you go to the playoffs this year and maybe you lose in the second round and it's all right, this group has kind of hit a ceiling. We need to shake some things up. If that was the feeling after this year, and again, it depends on how the season goes, but let's just say that's the vibe, then okay, then you go explore a Karl Anthony Towns trade for maybe somebody who fits a little better.
Yeah.
And not just the convenience of, oh, hey, we can make these salaries work here. He kind of plays the same position. So let's bring in Julius Randle and let's see. And we're going to do this on September 27th.
Yeah. It doesn't make it, the timing of it is bad. And not only that, but everyone needs to remember that, the Minnesota Timberwolves are in the middle of being sold, right?
Mm-hmm.
Glenn Taylor, who's been the owner since 1989, is selling. And it's Alex Rodriguez, Mark Lohr, and Michael Bloomberg that are behind the purchase. But this thing went wonky and sideways in April or March.
When Glenn Taylor realized, oh, shoot, this team is fun. I don't want to sell them.
Well, no. It went crazy when Glenn Taylor said, oh, my gosh, we've got a winner. And they submitted their budget for the next season and said they want to get below the apron. And he's like, wait a sec, you can't drop to a $172 million payroll. That means you're just going to have to give away one of our stars. And it was, so they started getting in a heated battle. they're in arbitration right now, whether they can, whether this sale is going to be fully like realized. As of right now, like Mark Lohr and Bloomberg and Alex Rodriguez, they're minority partners. So they're part of the ownership group, but they're not, you know, the primary right. owner. So it's just like a mess. And I'm intrigued to see what happens here. I really am.
I still think Minnesota's probably still a playoff team, but they were in a tier of, man, they could really take a leap. They could be like number one or two in the West. Mm-hmm. They were in that tier for me. They're a tier below that now.
Oh, like without any question.
They're in a tier with Sacramento and the rest of that group that is in that 4-7 range.
Yeah, and the problem is that Julius Randle hasn't even played. You know, he had a major shoulder injury last year. He played 46 games. He hasn't played in months and months. Like,
he has not played a game since January 27th.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen here, but I do know that it's a good thing that Sacramento Kings play them on opening night, and it's a good thing that they play them three times before November 25th.
Wow.
Yes.
They play them three times. Oh, and they're in their in-season tournament group,
and
right?
And they're in their in-season tournament group.
Oh, come on.
So boom, boom, boom. This is big.
Can I say something real quick, just while we're here?
No.
Okay, very good. Moving on.
Go ahead.
I kind of think the Kings are going to win the in-season tournament. I'm dead serious.
I almost spit my coffee everywhere.
I'm dead serious. The freaking Lakers can win it last year.
Kyle wants a banner.
And you're telling, bro, here's why. I have tentative plans the week that the play-in tournament goes to Vegas.
Yeah.
I have tentative plans to be out of town.
Oh.
And it just fits perfectly that I would go out of town as the Kings make this run and go win the in-season tournament.
Leave me here.
That's about
high
the time.
And dry.
Oh, get out of here. the way the schedule shakes out, that gives them plenty of runway to figure things out with DeMar DeRozan. And again, when I say figure things out with DeMar DeRozan, I mean like maximizing what they're going to be offensively and defensively.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're going to see Mike Brown kind of toy with the rotations all year, but I don't think it's like the Kings are going to stink out of the gate. Like, I think it's just we might see a couple of hiccups maybe late in games or just a turnover here or there that you go, okay, well, that'll get cleaned up. Like, that's mm-hmm. what I'm talking about. So by the time the in-season tournament really rolls around, I think they're going to start clicking a little bit.
Okay.
I think teams aren't going to be ready for it. I thought they were going to be in the mix last year. This year, I feel even better about it.
Okay.
I just wanted to get out in front of that take now. And you mentioned the in-season tournament.
Okay. I'm here for it. I'm here
I
for it.
I hope so. I hope so.
We do have some sort of breaking. Alonzo Ball is expected to be available for Bulls opening day. Wow.
Light applause for Alonzo. Good for him.
That's a very light applause. Okay, so we have media day starting today.
Yeah, we do.
It's at noon today. Media day is like organized chaos, Kyle.
Yeah, it seems like a lot.
It's a lot. It's an exhausting day where you're just constantly waiting for players to come around and
hurrying up to wait.
And you're watching them go from one station to the next, and some of them come over, some of them don't. It's a lot of scrum work. It's a lot of listening for things that stand out and like looking for somewhat viral moments. Mm-hmm. And but it's also for me, it really has that first day of school vibe. So you're excited to see, like, you know, who worked out and looks and looks bigger and stronger and comes in, you know, like
you,
impressive.
Can you do me a favor today?
Yeah.
Can you tweet that somebody is in the best shape of their life?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So last year that was Trey Lyles, and Perfect. It was also Kessler Edwards.
Mm,
Kessler Edwards walked in like, "Welcome to the gun show." Like that's where.
Hell yeah.
So you're gonna get that, right?
He looked great at the end of the bench.
Yeah,
just looked phenomenal.
He did. He really does look like, you know, he looked like he was in great shape. But that's kind of what you're looking for is stuff like that. You know, we'll get to see DeMar DeRozan. We'll get to see this group of young players that we don't know if we're gonna make the team or not.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, again, sort of a weird group of players.
Yeah.
As far as like playoff, I mean, like training camp battles and all that stuff. It almost feels like most of that's on hold because of all the injuries.
Yeah.
And that's a weird thing. The Kings really are walking into training camp with four of what you would consider their probably top nine rotational players not available.
Mm-hmm.
So Trey Lyles has a groin strain, not a groin. Yeah. Not a groin strain.
Shout out to Kenny.
Shout out, Kenny. He'll be out for the next 3 weeks at a minimum,
mm-hmm.
which takes him all the way up to like the start of the regular season,
again,
which is tough.
Yeah.
You have Jordan McLaughlin, who is, he has a grade 2 ankle sprain.
Oh, ankle.
He'll be reevaluated in 2 weeks. You've got Devin Carter, who of course is going to be out until January, February at the earliest.
Shoulder.
And then you have Kevin Huerter, who can practice and can talk to the media. He can't do any contact. He's not cleared for contact until at least mid-October. And so you have these four guys who are going to be out. So I think it's really fun because you're going to have a bunch of guys who are really trying hard to like earn a spot on the team. And mm-hmm. guys like Scalabissiere, guys like Terry Taylor, they just had Broderick Thomas, guys like Boogie Ellis.
Yeah.
And then you have this other layer where a guy like maybe Mason Jones is like, hey, look, I think I'm good enough to make the main team. And
sure.
he's a two-way contract, but he might come in and fight really hard. And maybe next thing
you know. In summer league.
Yeah, maybe next thing you know, he makes his way to the roster. Mm-hmm. I looked at his stats for last year at the G League level. He was incredible. He shot mm-hmm. like 41% from three.
Mm-hmm.
He averaged like 15.9 points, 5 rebounds, and 8 assists a game.
Was in the best shape of his life.
He lost, he told us, I think he lost 45 pounds.
That's insane.
From the time that he signed with the Kings, like in September until the time that, you know, late in the season. So shout out to Mason Jones, who I believe has been in Sacramento for a lot of the summer working out.
Mm-hmm.
And if he can get a bump up from, you know, from a two-way contract to the main roster, maybe that opens a spot for Boogie Ellis to
sure.
sign a two-way contract. So there's a lot of like moving pieces on the back end of the bench. And then like, look, Trey Lyles is going to be out for a while. Maybe you do need a power forward. Maybe
sure.
you do need a guy like Scalabissiere, who was excellent at the G League level, who averaged mm-hmm. 1.7 blocks per game,
mm.
who, you know, has always been like that, a big body guy, you know, 28 years old now, which is just crazy. But
I've got a lot of Scalabissiere takes on the internet that I would love to unearth. Not wrong, just early.
He's my guy, man. Like, what a sweetheart of a kid. And I'm excited to see him.
Yeah.
And I'm excited for him to actually get to compete for a training camp roster spot.
I love Media Day because we're going to go like, hey, De'Aaron Fox has new shoes. Domantas Sabonis is on Netflix. Hell yeah. What have you been up to this summer? Also, hey, who's going to start at the two?
Who's going to start this? That's kind of a tomorrow question. That's a first day of training camp question.
Right. James, get out of here. He's going to go cover Media Day. We'll have everything that he gathers, all that information, tomorrow for you right here on the Insiders. I'm going to stick around, though. Jesse Tapia is going to jump in. We'll talk some Kings. We'll talk some NFL for you, taking you up to noon, where we'll hand it off to D'Lo and KC right here on the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader.
Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hour number two. I'm Kyle Madsen. Jesse Tapia in for James Hamm. James going down to Kings Media Day, and we will bring you all the coverage of that throughout the day on social media, of course, and then tomorrow we will break it all down for you on the Insiders, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. Jesse, thanks so much for hanging out again like you did last week.
Glad to come off the bench.
Someone yeah, no,
it
this
like
is...
Malik Monk, we're ready to go.
Yeah, no, this is big time. Really appreciate it. Want to circle back on the 49ers and their 30-13 win over the Patriots. Do you feel like it was a good win?
Yes.
Yes?
No doubts about it.
Zero doubts.
Zero doubts.
I'm not allowed to be picky?
No, dude. We went into this game. It's like, hey, you guys need to win or whatever. It's not like, oh, yeah, the 49ers are back, blah, blah, blah. But, like, no, I'm not going to shame them for playing however against the Patriots or Patriots scoring however or whatever. Like, no, it's a good win.
That's kind of how – that's a little bit how I feel because I went in going – we talked about how the Giants and Cowboys game was a lot like this Patriots-Niners game, right? It was two teams that hadn't looked great, but trying to get right. But the Cowboys were Thursday night on the road, division game. Like, it's a tough spot. But you didn't feel like, hey, if the Niners go in 20-15, it's going to be great. I need them to kind of blow them out.
Yeah.
And then they did. Like, did the Patriots hang around in the game? Yeah, a little.
Well, I think we kind of expected that, too, because the Patriots, like, they're bad, but they're kind of, like, frisky in a way where it's like, you can understand it, I guess.
Sure. The deal is for me, the Patriots score to make it 20-10. And then the Niners go down 4-play, 70-yard drive to immediately go back up 17.
Yeah, like this game was never like...
They were never it was never out of control. I think the thing that sticks with me is it still feels like, okay, defensively it was great. Need to see that more moving forward. But I think the thing that sticks out to me is just offensively. They hang up 23 points on offense. Of course, they get the 7 on the Warner pick 6. Uh-huh. But it feels like they're still leaving too much meat on the bone on offense. Where... they are kicking too many field goals. They're converting 50% in the red zone. 50% of the red zone trips turn into touchdowns. That is super mid.
Yeah.
That is bottom half of the league easily when you look at last season. And if that's the case, if it's just, hey, Christian McCaffrey's out, it's tough in the red zone. Well, yeah, that's why you have Kyle Shanahan. That's why you have Deebo Samuel and George Kittle and Juwan Jennings and Brandon Ayuk. You have the weapons to be good in the red zone. There's just no excuse for it at this point. And I think that's where kind of my brain doesn't allow me to sit here and go, yeah, hey, awesome win. Because like you said, it was. They did exactly what we asked them to do. Uh-huh. But at the same time, when you start to spin it forward, I start looking at things like, man, they had 30, but they probably should have had something closer to 40.
I think this is something where like both things can be true.
Sure.
We're just kind of like, yeah, they won, that's great and all that. But you also have things they have to work on going forward. They're not the mm-hmm. perfect team right now. Like, you still need CMC. Brandon Ayuk, I guess, is just out there right now. He had 2 catches, 48 yards, right?
Just vibing.
Two catches. Yeah, just Juwan Jennings, wide receiver 1. You're kind of just waiting for guys just to fall into their roles and in place.
I thought Ayuk looked a little more like Ayuk yesterday. The 38-yard catch was just that's a deep in-breaking route. We saw that so many times last year. Mm. And then that diving catch on the 3rd and 9 for 10 yards, that's kind of the quintessential Brandon Ayuk catch to me. Like outbreaking, he's making a dive. Like that's just a really nice play. I actually kind of oddly think that one of the big takeaways for me yesterday was the interception that Purdy threw. Not in a bad way though, because the Patriots kicked a field goal to go up, to cut the deficit from 17 to 14 with like 13 and a half minutes left, and the Niners get the ball on their own 30. And I was super expecting run, run, run. They're just going to try and bleed this clock. They're going to try and make this a 9-minute drive and kick a field goal and ice the game. But instead, they come out on first down and they go 45 yards, deep shot to Juwan Jennings, who makes an unbelievable catch. Great throw, great catch. Just a good football play all around. And then they go, they run it with Deebo, is called back for a flag. They throw it again. And then they take a shot to the end zone on 2nd and 8. And it's like, that's exactly, and they threw a pick and it wasn't great. Not a good decision, would definitely take. But it's the process, right? It's the Patriots cut the lead to 14 and the Niners didn't go, hey, we're just going to bleed the clock here.
I was like, all right, let's go kill the game again.
Yes. And that was that little mindset switch was the biggest takeaway for me from yesterday. Will the defense hold up? Don't know. Will the offense figure out how to score in the red zone? Don't know. But that mindset shift is just something we haven't seen under Kyle Shanahan with the 49ers. And honestly, it's one of the reasons that I think they've continued to kind of lose these games, where they have so many games that they've up double digits in the fourth quarter and they lose, right? I think it's because of that. And I think yesterday you saw a fundamental shift in, okay, this game might get away from us. Because 13 and a half minutes, they go 3 and out, they punt. Patriots have the ball with a lot of time left, where if they score now, it's a 1-possession game.
Yeah.
That is how games get away from you.
I think it's also an aspect of, he just fully trusts Brock Purdy at this point now, too.
Yes.
Like, I think now you have a quarterback where it's not like Jimmy G with the 49ers was great and all. Ending wasn't the best or whatever, but like Brock Purdy is a lot different, a lot better. Now Kyle Shanahan has a guy who's like, all right, if I need to put the ball, football in his hands or whatever, and I need him to kill the game for us through a pick or whatever, which is fine. Mm-hmm. Not fine, but you know how we're talking about and all that, but you kind of trust the guy now.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think that also speaks to, remember when he didn't throw the deep ball to Ayuk against the Rams last week?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's all situational. Like I said, I said at the time, if that happens in the second quarter, I think he lets it rip. And this is a spot where, okay, it's up 2 touchdowns. You're basically arm punting. Defense is playing great. Going to take that shot. And he threw it a little bit late, and he talked about it after the game, and Shanahan talked about it after the game. But yeah, I loved the process. Like, that whole drive was like, oh my God, finally.
Yeah.
Like, they're trying to take advantage of their weapons and actually go score a touchdown instead of trying to bleed clock. Wow, what a time.
We got Michael Day One Chad Elson here. Says he's completely opposite of you. He hates the decision not to bleed the clock out and come out throwing bombs. I think I'm anti-bleeding the clock out unless the running game is just working for you at that point, because I feel like it just never works.
And here's a... I I get the idea. If there were 4 minutes left and they're up 2 touchdowns, then yeah, dude, just run clock.
Uh-huh.
Run it in the line, make them use timeouts, maybe try and get a run around the around the edge and get a first down and really just kind of ice the game that way. In that spot, yes. But with 13 and a half minutes left, that's not bleed the clock time.
Yeah, no, you still got
to
play football.
You have to go play football. And I love that. And again, that was just the throw that was open and Purdy made it. Uh-huh. It's not like Shanahan went, hey, we need to go deep on this play. Like, no, that's just the route that was open against that coverage, so that's what he threw. And I love the aggressiveness because that is what I feel has been lacking from Kyle Shanahan's game management. I feel like he has been way too conservative, and it has cost them games. Whereas yesterday, okay, they didn't get a touchdown, but the process of, hey, they just cut it to 2 scores, we're going to really quickly try and make this a 3-score game again, I loved that. I thought it was great.
Well, maybe Kyle Shanahan's feeling the heat a bit too, or is not hot seat or whatever, but just kind of, all right, we got to make adjustments here,
or else
things are going to go wayward or whatever.
Yeah, man. That's exactly where I am. It is so weird to watch the Patriots be bad at football. I can't. Because you're like me, and I think there's probably a lot of people listening who are in the same boat. I don't really remember the Patriots ever not being good.
Yeah. Me too.
And now they're at a point. Even worse.
Literally.
And now it's at a point where they're like really bad.
I feel like I'm talking about them all of last week and kind of today. It's kind of like I still give them that kind of respect.
You do.
They're not the Panthers. I always try to put that like, Kevin, right. They're not the Panthers or whatever. Maybe they are. And
they
I'm
might
just
be.
Still giving them some kind of respect.
They looked so bad yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
They looked terrible. And it's so odd because I just kept expecting their one touchdown drive was 27 yards.
Uh-huh.
And I kept expecting like, okay, this is going to be the driver they figured out. Okay, here's the driver they're just going to put the clamps on defensively. And it just didn't, just never happened.
Yeah, maybe it's just time to let go.
I just think they're not
the dynasty was great.
I will say though, they are doing the right thing, keeping Drake May far away.
Do not play him this season.
Oh,
there's no
my
reason
God.
To play him this season. There's no reason. Get a top 5 pick. Figure out what you want to do with that. Maybe draft an offensive lineman. That might help, but...
I know he needs to play.
Mm-hmm.
And I fully get that you can't get better at football unless you play.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're also not going to get better at football when you're pressured 19 times on 39 dropbacks.
He'll have no chance.
What's he going to do? Like, what's he going to do differently that Jacoby Brissett isn't doing?
Exactly.
I go out there, watch Jacoby Brissett, who's a pro. Watch the way he prepares. Watch the way he deals with things in game. Deals with adversity. Let him make the mistakes.
Just be glued to the playbook. Honestly, if I'm Jerod Mayo or whatever, be glued to the playbook next year. Like, if you studied enough, not studied enough, but like if you're just familiar enough, then we'll have the offensive line ready to go, make some additions and all that, and kind of have you in a better situation.
I will say, though, that at one point during the game, the Patriots were on offense. Drake May didn't have a hat on and was like standing over back by the bench. Bro, I need you, maybe even helmet on, front and center. I'm a football guy.
Are we sure that's not old man yells at cloud take right there?
I'm a football guy.
I get it.
And I would like to see, does Drake May like football? That was the question I had.
Uh-huh.
Does he want to be there?
All right, Colin Cowherd. Yeah, I wouldn't let him touch the field this season.
No.
But I don't know how much of that's
going
to be
up to them. That offensive
line
is atrocious, dude.
Yeah.
Like Kevin Givens, like all due respect to Kevin Givens, he's a good rotational player. 2.5 sacks in a quarter. They give up 4 sacks in the second quarter.
Yeah, not great.
I think there was one play I can remember in my head where Jacoby Brissett looked really comfortable in the pocket.
Whew. Probably the same for him. You can remember that one play. But like, I think they're in a spot where like they shouldn't play him at all this year, but he's already getting asked about it post-game press conferences and all that. It's going to be a story all year. I feel like at some point they're kind of just going to throw him out there.
Yeah. We mentioned Brandon Ayuk. It's really nice coming out of a game where he just didn't have a super productive game. Mm. Didn't have a drop, had a really nice catch, had a big game. The Brandon Ayuk breakout is coming. In fact, it might come this week against the Cardinals. Like, it's right there. He's very close.
For sure.
Yes. I feel so good about it. In fact, yeah, I'm calling it this week. Brandon
Ayuk, you want to guarantee it? We got some stats going on. What do you got?
What's
the Brandon Ayuk breakout?
No, it's just a vibe, dude.
Just a vibe?
Yeah, like he's going to, at some point, he's going to have like 9 for 128 and a touchdown. Everyone's going to go, oh, yeah, Brandon Ayuk. No, about time. About time for $30 million.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
No, he needed a couple weeks to ramp up, and now he's got to get chemistry with Brock Purdy back. I thought the 38-yard gain was great. You saw the diving catch. We talked about it all last week. Christian Gonzalez is a really good player.
Mm-hmm.
Christian Gonzalez, I think, got targeted 5 times. He gave up 3 catches for like 12 yards.
Yeah, it turns out Christian Gonzalez might be a top 5 cornerback at some point.
Just a great player. And he wants smoke, too. There was a long catch and run for Juwan Jennings where Christian Gonzalez came over and like put his shoulder down at the end of the run. Didn't just guide him out of bounds. He hit him. I'm all in. I'm all in on Christian Gonzalez.
I'm a big Christian Gonzalez guy, too.
Yeah.
You know who I'm out on? We can talk about later.
Ooh.
Garrett Wilson. We finally traded
done?
Him. We finally traded him.
Dang.
Got him out of there. If you're in the Garrett Wilson club like me, trade him. It's over.
You're done?
Done. Dunzo. Uh-huh. It's over. Shout out Chris Godwin. Welcome to the squad.
I think you might regret that.
I don't think so.
I think you might regret
that. Bro, him and Rodgers are just not on the same page at all.
How do you lose a game? Speaking of the Jets, mm-hmm. Sorry to shift gears, everybody, but we're here. How do you lose a game where you gave up -7 passing yards in the first quarter?
Dude, I was watching it. Rodgers and the wide receivers are not on the same page at all. There were so many times where he's throwing it to one spot and say Mike Williams is running farther down the field or whatever. Him and Garrett Wilson had a few like that. It's all of his receivers. And Breece Hall, he's a good running back. But he's not what they try to say.
They said he was McCaffrey.
Yeah, no, he's not.
That's
that.
Crazy.
He's not that.
Speaking of Christian McCaffrey, he's supposed to start his ramp up today.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
And I keep seeing like November, so he's still a month out. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
Basically.
So Kyle Shanahan said I would like him to increase his. I don't know if that means getting on the field and doing work,
mm-hmm.
and he's been doing just off field stuff like rehab stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Or if that means he's going to be doing like football drills. I have no idea. And there's still no, hey, yeah, hope to have him back in week 8 or whatever date. I'm still circling week 10. That's the week after the bye week where you get him 8 weeks off plus the free week in week 9 and then you get him back week 10.
Yeah. I mean, ramp up, I don't.
But is it, I
don't even know what to call it.
I need somebody to, I need the tell-all on what's happening with Christian McCaffrey because it went from, okay, so here's the timeline, right? In July, he starts out, well, week 17 last year, this Achilles injury crops up. Misses week 18, gets the bye week for the wild card round, and then plays like 95%+ of the snaps in all 3 playoff games. So you figure he's good to go. Good to go to start camp. Oh, nope, calf strain. And he's out for camp, out for the preseason. Then come to find out, it's Achilles tendonitis. Okay. He's limited during the first week, questionable week 1, but they think he's going to play. Okay. Oh, nope. He's a scratch in week 1.
Then it turns out, it might be week 2.
Oh, actually, you know what? We might actually put him on IR. Yeah. After previously going like, no, I haven't considered IR at all. In a week, it went to, yeah, he's probably going to go on IR. And then he does. And then we hear from Ian Rappaport, 6 weeks. It's not going to be the 4, it's going to be the 6. Wow. All right, well. You know, that kind of makes sense. That falls in line with the coming back after the week 9 bye. So that sounds about right. And then it's, oh, wait, no, he's going to Germany. And, oh, according to other doctors who aren't treating him, oh, it might be 10 to 12 weeks. And now he's back from Germany and, oh, yeah, the ramp up's starting. Like, what? This has so many red flags to me.
Yeah, because it's all just been vague. Because at this point, if you're ramping him up, okay, like, is he not completely healthy, but he's good to go now, basically. You can start, like, getting ready. Like, what's going on?
Right. And is this ramp up like, hey, they have an exact date and they know they mm-hmm. need to take these steps. So he's going to start step 1 on Monday today? Or is this, yeah, hey, we're going to have him practice because he got all these injections or treatments or whatever he got in Germany. We don't know. He got all this treatment done, and now, yeah, we're going to test it out and see how it goes.
I mean, it could just be too, like, if we're just throwing scenarios, like, hey, he's back at the facility now.
Yeah, I
he's just getting treatment or whatever.
There are so many red flags with Christian McCaffrey's Achilles to mm-hmm. me, and I don't like any of it.
Do you want to know?
Scarred by Kevin Durant, but man.
Yeah. I'm trying to word this the right way, but, like, is Christian McCaffrey someone you can count on for the season right now?
No.
Like, moving forward, are you just... Jordan Mason's the running back, and we're going to have to get through the playoffs with Jordan Mason at this point.
If the 49ers, because we talked about, James and I talked a little bit earlier about their red zone problem, right? Or maybe you and I did. I don't know. They all blend together. But they're 50% of the red zone. Mm-hmm. Like I said, that was earlier. That was with you. And if they're banking on, yeah, hey, we don't need to figure this out now. We're good at 50%. Because when Christian McCaffrey comes back, we'll be awesome again.
And that's what I'm basically wondering. Because I've seen,
that,
I feel like I've
that's
seen
that's a that is a failure if they're doing that.
Okay, because I've seen 49er fans like, oh yeah, like we're kind of worried about CMC or whatever. I don't know what it's going to look like. And there's the others where it's kind of like, when he's back, we'll be fine.
If that's what they're doing, if they're not trying to solve any of their offensive problems right now because they think Christian McCaffrey will solve all of them, and maybe, like, yeah, for sure. But I'm not. I can't. How can you comfortably rely on that?
Well, I feel like at this point, just talking through it, like the 49ers have to have been caught off guard at some point too. From how it was talked about, whatever, all right, he'll be ready for week one. We're going to sit him out all of training camp. And then it's kind of like, nope. And it's like, wait, maybe we'll put him on IR, maybe not. Now he is going on IR. And it's kind of like, it hasn't been smooth at all.
They were definitely, to me, I think they thought, yeah, we'll give him training camp off, the preseason off. He'll be good for week one. And then we just have to manage it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's about, okay, hey, we feel really good about Jordan Mason, who's had a great camp. This is actually a great opportunity for him. He's gotten RB1 snaps, so he can shoulder more of the workload. We're confident in him. So we can lessen Christian McCaffrey's workload during games. And also, you know, he's going to get Wednesdays off during the week for practice, and he's going to get extra treatment. And that's what I thought they envisioned all year. And then something happened in the lead up to week one. It might have been the Sunday before week one or the Monday of week one that something happened that they weren't ready for. Because if they were, then they would have put him on IR like right away.
Yeah.
Just to get that clock started so whenever he's ready, they can get him back. So I think that's when they got, I guess, blindsided a little bit. I guess any injury could get sideways on you. So not blindsided, but they weren't necessarily prepared.
And you're wrapping him up right now, but it's like, and we mentioned November. That's not even like a set thing. That's just kind of a month
very
we've
vague.
Seen thrown around, yeah.
Yeah, I don't. I just I would rather see the 49ers try and figure out some of their offensive issues without Christian McCaffrey and bank on not having him.
Mm-hmm.
If you get him back, awesome. Like your offense is clicking again. But their offense isn't so bad that it's like, oh my God, you have to rush him back now.
Yeah.
They're not, they are just not scoring. Yeah, the red zone stuff, it matters a little bit, but they're still hanging up 23, 24 points a game. Like, that's plenty.
Their issues are issues I think they themselves can fix rather than we need Christian to get out here and fix it for us.
I would agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have plenty on the offensive side. We've been saying that all year. And it's why I said last week, the Christian McCaffrey injury concern is below my concern of what's going on with their defense. And frankly, that's still the case. So if they can get Christian McCaffrey back, awesome. And whatever this ramp up today means, I have no idea. At some point, ideally, right, they would say, yeah, the ramp up's going great. We're targeting this date.
Mm-hmm.
Or we're going to reevaluate him in 3 weeks. Or what? Like just some kind of language that's other than like, eh, we're going to ramp him up.
Talk to you later.
Yeah, all right. Bye, guys.
Thanks.
There's just, so to answer your question, that was a long way of saying, no, you can't rely on him this year.
Yeah.
And if you wind up getting to, awesome. That is such a nice club to have in your bag. But if I'm the Niners coaching staff right now, I'm doing everything I can to figure out what the offense looks like sans Christian McCaffrey this year. And with Jordan Mason. And with integrating another running back, because there's no, he's on pace for like 387 carries.
So modern day, I don't know, insert whoever.
Earl Campbell.
Earl Campbell. Thurman Thomas.
Dude.
Yeah.
The GOAT?
No.
Some are saying.
Not better than Adrian Peterson, I'll tell you that.
That's a wild take.
Yeah.
All due respect to Thurman Thomas, but come on, man. Cardinals and Rams both lost yesterday. That's good news for the 49ers.
I think I'm out on the Cardinals.
Are you?
Yeah.
I think I'm in on the Commanders.
I'm in on the Commanders, definitely.
Jayden
NFC
Daniels
East champion,
shout
Washington
out
Commanders.
Somebody in the chatty house, when I was doing my Dynasty Fantasy draft on the show, somebody in the chatty house is like, bruh, take Jayden Daniels.
Whoever that was is a smart person.
Smart person, smarter than me. Salute to them. I'm man enough to admit that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be right all the time.
It's all right.
Catching an L. That's fine. I'll hold it.
Keep going, keep going.
Just play on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Keep going.
No, that's just, I messed up because Jayden Daniels, doesn't look like a good rookie quarterback in the way that, oh yeah, no, he's got a nice little start. He just looks dominant.
Yeah.
And whatever Cliff Kingsbury has going on with that offense looks unfreaking stoppable.
Jaden Daniels looks like he's in control.
Yes.
He doesn't look like a rookie quarterback. He looks like he's just in control, ready to go.
Yes. Jaden Daniels so far this season, let me get his numbers up, because this is not, oh, good rookie numbers. These are good, just unbelievable numbers for Jaden Daniels. First of all, he completed 86.7% of his passes yesterday. He is at a 80, where are we at? Here we go.
I think he's 83% on the year.
82.1%. Wow. 82.1% completion rate, 897 yards. He's averaging 8.5 yards per attempt. He's thrown 3 touchdowns and just 1 interception. He has also rushed for, let's see. He rushed for 47 yards yesterday. He's rushed for 4 touchdowns. He looks unbelievable.
Yeah, he's been tearing it up.
So I'm in on the Commanders, and I...
Arizona's 1-3 now?
Yeah, Arizona's 1-3.
They
out of the club right now?
Yeah. I'll talk to you guys next year, I think.
Wow.
Maybe I'm being harsh, but...
I'm not there just yet. They had...
Because they weren't even close in this one.
They had... They nearly beat Buffalo in Buffalo week 1.
Yeah, week one's always weird, though.
They beat the hell out of the Rams in week 2. They have a really close game against the Lions at home in week 3. And then they get smoked by a Red Hot Commanders team in week 4. That's just, I don't have enough. I don't have enough.
I got it.
You're really confident the Niners are going to win next week?
Pretty confident. I'm not as worried about the 49ers as others, I think. And I think that's because I'm just all modded in on Brock Purdy at this point.
Oh, yeah.
I think as long as he's playing the way he is, they're going to be able to get
stops against the Cardinals.
Yeah, but I still got faith in the 49ers to get it done. Maybe I'll change my mind. It's a week-to-week league, Kyle. You ever heard of that?
I have heard that.
Thank you.
Yeah. We'll talk some more NFC West. We'll get into Mad Props, and we'll talk more week 4 of the NFL coming up. Jesse Tapia in for James Hamm. Kings Media Day is today. That's where James is at, getting you all the best Sacramento Kings coverage for ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. We're the Insiders. Back in a second.
Now, back to the Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Jesse Tapia there, Kyle Madsen here. We're hanging out with you till noon, then we'll hand it off to D'Lo and Casey. The handoff coming up about 12 minutes. One of D'Lo or Casey will be in today. I never know.
It'll be Damien, I think.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a guess.
I have no idea. Sometimes Damien goes over and sits at the chair right outside the window.
The thing about ESPN 1320 is that someone's going to show up. We don't know who someone's going to be here. Yes. We're always going to be on the air. Someone will be here.
Yeah. That's it. I don't need to know, frankly.
Exactly.
Doesn't change how I'm going to approach the conversation.
Yes. Don't worry about it. Someone will be here.
Yep. That's it. ESPN 1320. Don't worry about it. Yeah. Someone will be here. You're talking about week 4 of the NFL. Wraps up tonight with Monday Night Football.
Big time Dolphins versus Titans matchup.
Is it?
Everyone's, hey, don't do that. I'm trying to do a promo here.
Okay, go ahead.
No, you just stomped all over it.
No, go ahead. Sorry, just go
watch Seahawks Lions, whatever.
I'm going to.
Yeah, I might.
You don't have a rundown.
No, it's right here. It's all good.
Did you read what I wrote on my bullet point underneath the Titans at Dolphins game? The rundown is the thing we use to put together.
Oh, wait, where's the Titans?
It's like a layout.
I just got the back right here.
Other page. Go ahead and read for the people.
Oh, I'm so sorry, but I'm not so excited to watch this game. I get it.
I'm so excited to not watch this game.
Excuse me.
I'm going to actively like, yes, I'm so glad I'm not watching that.
I get it. Honestly, with the Dolphins, unless you're me or Polo L in the chat, shout out right here. Like you said, 93,000 people will be packed in the stadium for Dolphins Titans. That's a WWE thing. Just believe it, all right?
Okay.
But like I said, me and Polo will watch the Dolphins for you guys.
Thank you. You guys
don't need to check in with them till Tua's back, if he comes back this year.
Yeah.
They should be out of sight, out of mind, I think.
That's kind of what I'm
people
doing.
Not watching.
Although I'm really interested to see what Mike McDaniel does with Snoop Huntley.
Yeah, I was excited to see what he did with Skylar Thompson.
Were you, though?
Yes, bro. I don't know.
No, that's... No. Stop.
Well, because we were holding Tyler on Huntley's to the Buffalo playoff game 2 years ago. Tyler Huntley's a Pro Bowler the same way Mac Jones is a Pro Bowler. Don't make me do this to my quarterback today, bro. I'm trying to be all optimistic going
into gassing him up.
Come on. Yeah, he's playing for his hometown team today on Monday Night Football.
We're going to get some read option in there.
Yeah, we're very excited. I think Mike McDaniel kind of compared him to RG3 loosely at some point.
Oh, yeah, dude. So. The Dolphins are going to do some... you know what? Hey... That's well done by you. I'm back in on this
game. There we go.
I'm back in on this game. I'm dialed. There we go. I think the Dolphins are going to do some weird stuff on offense. But frankly, I kind of forget the Titans exist sometimes.
They have the worst quarterback in the league, I think.
No.
Will Levis is really bad.
No.
Who are we talking about then at that point?
The worst quarterback in the league.
We're talking about starting quarterbacks. Skylar Thompson does not count. Otherwise, he can be in that mix.
Okay. So Bryce Young doesn't count then?
No. No, Andy Dalton's in there now.
Okay.
And honestly, like, Will Levis was just as bad as
Man.
Bryce.
Man. Anthony Richardson count?
I'll take Anthony Richardson over Will Levis.
Well, I think
Anthony
I would
Richardson,
too. There's
upside. Potential. Yeah, there's upside there.
Man.
Give me Jacoby Brissett over
Justin
Will
Fields
Levis.
Even looks better this year.
Yes, give me Justin Fields.
Give me Jacoby Brissett? Stop.
Bro. It's bad when your coach is after the post game. Yeah, he's an adult. Okay, he knows what's right and what's
wrong. If you swap Jacoby Brissett.
Talking about Will Levis, like he spilled some milk or was writing crayon on the wall. Like, come on, dude, he's done.
If the Titans called the Patriots right now and said, we will trade you Jacoby Brissett or we'll trade you Will Levis for Jacoby Brissett.
You're not going to do that because one guy is young. He might have potential, but.
But just in a vacuum, you think the Patriots say no?
Yeah, you got Drake May. Why are you going to do that? It's logical.
Okay, hang on. The Patriots call and say, hey, we will give you Jacoby Brissett.
The Titans say no.
Or Will Levis.
Okay, and these guys are in the same tier, but Will Levis, like if we're splitting hairs between Jacoby Brissett and Will Levis, I think I'm winning at that point.
It's a good point.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think if you told me I have to win, like one game to win for my life, I think I'm taking Jacoby Brissett.
Dude, we've seen it. Three
all right,
times
fine. You're right. You're
Will
right.
Levis
you're right. Will
down.
Levis stinks.
Somebody's going to catch it.
Will Levis stinks. Well, we just always talk about this with Brock Purdy. Like the undervalued part of quarterbacking is just not doing anything stupid.
Mm-hmm. That's honestly,
you have to
that's
other,
half of the game.
You have
honestly.
To do other stuff. You yeah. have to go make plays, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If you're just captain, throw it away and only dump it off to the running back, you're not going to be very good, right?
Yeah. yeah.
Like, you're going to be Alex Smith. But that was mean. Alex Smith had a good career. But you're just going to, like, you're not going to be super effective as a quarterback. In that
yeah.
way. On the other hand, if you're, like, throwing backhanded passes to the boundary and getting pick sixed once a game, that just.
If you can do the half where it's just be half of the game where just don't turn the ball over and don't lose it, even if you can't do all the other stuff, that's probably 10 years in the league because you'll be a backup anywhere.
Yeah.
That's literally half the game right there as a quarterback, I feel.
I agree.
Shout out Will Levis. I hope you stink it up today. And that mayo stuff is disgusting. Stop doing that, too. Putting in your coffee and
just
all that.
Just so gross.
Horrible.
Sorry, I'm fighting for my life over here.
Yeah, Kyle's going through it, guys.
I'm fighting for my life. All right. Enough about that game. Second Monday night game tonight, we have Seahawks at Lions. This is a huge game. For people in the 49ers universe.
Yeah.
The 49ers cinematic universe.
Are you worried about the Seahawks if they win today? Worried about the Seahawks as far as, all right,
if the Seahawks are legit if they win this game.
Because
I still think the Lions are good. Like, I didn't hop off the Lions bandwagon.
Yeah, yeah.
I still think the Lions are really good. And I understand, we talked about this a little bit yesterday. I was doing post-game at 95.7, but we talked about this a little bit yesterday. There's a world where a person could talk themselves into if you're the 49ers rooting for the Seahawks here. Because, like, you're talking number one seed. You still have two games left against the Seahawks. You can pick them up then because they're two back right now. But on the other hand, when you're where the Niners are just as a team this year in 2024, you don't get to talk number one seed.
Well, it's like, do we trust the 49ers right now? And I'm asking you, Chatty House,
yeah.
you can answer it too. Yeah, yeah. Do we trust the 49ers, like, the last few seasons when the games come up? It's like, you should beat this team. Like, do we trust them to actually get that done now this season?
With this current iteration of the team, no.
And that's tough, too. Like, if Seahawks are winning ball games or whatever,
right.
you could think what you want about them. But, like, if you expect the Niners to catch them, that's kind of tough.
Well, this is where they play the Seahawks in 2 weeks. If the Seahawks win tonight
mm-hmm.
and the Niners lose to them, it's like in week six, it's like over.
Yeah.
That's
you're going to have to go on a run if you're the 49ers. At that point, man, if you do catch them, you figure it out, I guess.
And you're needing Seattle to lose a bunch of games. Like, it's cooked. So you just need Seattle to lose. Because the goal is obviously the number one seed, right?
Yeah.
But worry about that in week 14. If they already have two losses. You figure four absolute maximum number of losses you can have and be the number one seed. They're two down already. Like, if all of a sudden they go on in some insane run, like everything just breaks right, and oh my God, it is sunshine and rainbows, and the 49ers, what an epic season, and you're at 12-2 after week 15. Okay, then yeah, let's take a look at the one seed.
Yeah.
But for now, like, you have to catch the Seahawks.
Yeah, the Seahawks, like I said, whether you think they're legit or not, record is what you say, what they say it is or whatever, mm-hmm. and they could be 4-0 after today.
Yeah, and if it wouldn't just be 4-0, because you're right. Getting to 3-0, doesn't matter how you get there. If early season is weird. If you get to 3-0, great job. But if they go into Detroit now and beat the Lions.
Especially going into Detroit.
Yeah, man, that's just an impressive-ass win, and they're 4-0.
How do we feel about Jared Goff if they lose this game?
Ooh.
Yeah, so you went on that's Detroit. Are you hours. Like, say, like, that's they lose hours. Or whatever. Like, you went on Detroit still as a team. Like, Jared Goff, the quarterback, we're still all good with that? He's looked kind of shaky to start.
He has, man. And this is where I think if you flip Jared Goff and Brock Purdy, I think the Niners get pretty substantially worse.
Yeah, and I think the Lions are still Super Bowl contenders.
Yeah, yeah. That is something I didn't think before the season started. And my mind has changed on that over the first few weeks. I don't know, man.
We'll talk about it.
Like, it depends on, honestly, it depends on how the game goes.
Yeah, it would have to be Jared Goff. The Lions lost because of Jared Goff.
Yeah, like, he's just terrible. Mm. And which is just like on the table. If he goes 15 of 31 for 202 yards and two interceptions, then yeah, like, let's talk. But yeah, no, he plays well, and the Seahawks has made a couple more plays, and DK Metcalf had a long touchdown, and something weird happened on special. I'm not going to say the Lions are out, but no matter what, if the Seahawks win this game, I'm in.
Oh, yeah, ultimately, this game's probably more about the Seahawks than it is the Lions.
I would agree.
Yeah.
I would definitely agree. There's enough track record there with Detroit based on what they did at the end of 2022 and then into 2023.
Mm-hmm.
Probably should have gone to the Super Bowl last year. There's enough of a track record there that I'll still think, okay, they can dig out of this. Whereas with the Seahawks, let's go to the other side of this coin. If Seattle goes and gets smoked tonight, then to me, I'm going, all right, they are kind of who we thought they were. Mm-hmm. The Patriots took them to overtime at Foxborough. They beat the Broncos by what, like six in week one? And the Broncos aren't looking great.
They went to overtime with the Patriots, I think?
Yeah, they went to OT with the Pats. And then who'd they beat last week?
Who cares?
I do.
No, you don't.
I do care.
No, it doesn't matter, bro. Just leave it.
Wow. No,
just
I'm
leave
not.
It alone,
no,
bro.
No, no.
It doesn't matter.
No,
it doesn't no, matter if no, they beat Skylar no. Thompson or whoever. It doesn't
oh,
matter.
That's right. Oh,
it
no.
doesn't matter.
Oh,
who cares?
No.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm so sorry.
Thanks, Kyle.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. Thanks.
I'm so sorry.
Dolphins Titans tonight. I'm fine.
I forgot. I'm so sorry.
I'm fine.
I was like, why is he doing? Like, what's a.
No, yeah, no, I was not being a jerk.
It beat the Dolphins 24-3.
They did. It was bad.
Yeah, man. We're going to learn a lot about the Seahawks here. They're at Detroit. Then they're home against the Giants. So you figure this is why the Niners need them to lose. Because you figure best case scenario here for the Niners is going into that game against Seattle, they're 3-2. That's best case scenario.
Mm-hmm.
If the Seahawks beat the Lions, they have the Giants at home next week.
The Giants aren't nothing to write home about.
That's a W for the Seahawks.
Yeah.
Which means you could now be two games back going into that Thursday night game, and the Seahawks are sitting at 5-0.
Can you imagine the 49ers going up against the 5-0 Seattle Seahawks?
I mean, God,
that's
it would
in
feel
Santa
like
Clara or Seattle.
That's in Seattle.
That was always tough.
Yeah, no, in Seattle. That's right. They've had to go to Seattle on Thursday night 3 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Very odd.
Those games are always fun, too.
Yeah, but I mean, I figure you take that just going up the coast a little bit, then flying across country or anything crazy like that. But yeah, so that's why the Niners need the Seahawks to lose tonight. Forget the number one seed for a minute. You need to win the division to secure a playoff spot and secure a home playoff game.
Say what you want, believe like whatever kind of quarterback Geno Smith is, like he can play ball. The Seahawks are no slouches.
Geno's a good player.
Even if, say, they lose to Detroit or whatever, and it's like, oh, yeah, they are who we thought. It's going to be a wild card team around there, at least, where they're winning ball games.
Yeah, they're not going to start 3-0 and then finish 6-11. Mm-hmm. No, they're going to be in the mix this year. It's 23-20 in OT, by the way, against the Patriots. Not 26. 26-20 was the Broncos' score the week before. But, yeah. So, it to me, if you're a 49er fan, you're rooting hard for the Lions tonight.
Yeah.
That's
kind of what it is at this point.
Down a peg. Yeah, for sure. All right. Hey, you want to do Mad Props?
Sure.
All right. Let's get to Mad Props.
It's time for Mad Props. Two games, two props. Which number will be higher? That's for Kyle and James to decide.
And Jesse.
Here's Mad Props.
And so, we've looped Jesse in on Mad Props this year because it's more fun with a third person. Couldn't do it. James is out at Media Day for the Kings today. So he could not be here for Mad Props, and that's tough for him because he had a really good week. The first prop, if you're unfamiliar with the bit, we take two props from different games. I make them up. I just kind of mix and match stats, and we pick which number is going to be higher. We had Juwan Jennings targets or Zamir White rushing attempts. We all went Zamir White rushing attempts, and that was the right call. 17 rushing attempts for Zamir White. 6 targets, though, for Juwan Jennings, who still led the 49ers in targets.
Shout out Juwan Jennings.
Shout out to Juwan Jennings,
he's
man.
He's kind of playing himself up a little bit this year.
Yeah, I think he's going to just...
He's not just a third wide receiver. I feel like you kind of involve him a bit. Not crazy, but like, yeah, Juwan's a guy.
It feels like they're not going to start going 3 wide receiver sets and they just don't do a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And Kyle Shanahan has said, like, no, that's not the scheme. That's not what we're going to do. But I think you're going to see him get some snaps from Brandon Ayuk. I think you're going to see him get some from Deebo Samuel.
Yep.
You just have to integrate him more into the offense. Number two. We had the 49ers total score or Gardner Minshew passing attempts. You and I went Gardner Minshew. James went Niners total score. 30-24, the final there. We both took an L.
It's tough.
That's tough. But it's good news for the Raiders. They got their ground game going. And the Niners, you take 30 points any week. Any week of the season.
Exactly.
Number three, the 49ers sacks or Raiders turnovers. We all went Niners sacks, and that was the right move. They had 6 sacks of Jacoby Brissett yesterday. Just one.
It's a pause by Damian Barling right there. Yeah, like I said, it's been 13-20. Someone's going to show up.
Someone's going to be here. I should have done this first because we can't. Moral of the story, Jordan Mason receiving yards or Robert Spillane tackles, 37-12 the final there. James took Spillane. You and I went with Jordan Mason. Brandon Ayuk receiving yards or Browns Raiders total points. I went total points. You tried to talk me out of it. I stuck with it. Talking me out of it would have been the right thing to do. 48-36, Brandon Ayuk receiving yards versus Browns Raiders total points. And then Patriots third down percentage or Raiders total rushing yards. We're getting weird. 152 rushing yards for the Raiders. Really good day on the ground for them. Niners held the Patriots to 31% on third downs. Part of a really good defensive day for the 49ers. James goes 5-1 on the week.
Whatever.
He is 13-8-3 for the season. You went 4-2. 7-4-1 for the season. I'm 3-3 this week. 12-9-3 for the season. And now that is Mad Props. We'll have another one for you on Friday. Let's get to the handoff of Damian
Mad
Barling.
Mad Props. That's a great name.
Isn't that sick?
I love that.
Yeah, thanks, man. We have a great
We have money. Sponsor that.
Yeah. That's a great segment to sponsor. I'm just
It
get,
would be.
Get a couple,
yeah. Imagine that.
Get a bunch of mentions during the week.
We got standings now.
We got standings.
We got records.
I have a spreadsheet.
No, it's good. Yeah,
thanks,
we have
man.
A pocket watching league championship belt. And yeah, no one listens to us. Or at least no one out there listens.
That
to
feels
but
like
we try.
That feels like it's primed for like a bank.
Bro.
Is that, am I crazy?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
No. Anyways. Hi, Kyle.
Good. Hi,
what's up, Jesse?
Hi,
what's up, Dan?
What's up, man?
Good win for the Niners yesterday?
Yeah. There's no such thing as a bad win.
Nah.
There's not. They won.
What could you pick apart from this one, then?
I felt like they needed to get in the end zone more often, offensively.
So,
they continue, and this is why this wasn't a one-off thing. Like, the inability to get in the end zone is starting to become a problem.
No, I got you. I was a little concerned the first two drives ending in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was a little worried about that. And then, you know, Fred Warner kind of bust the game open a little bit. But, you know, those are things you correct, right? Like, you get an opportunity to, you know, correct things after a victory. Like, if they had beaten the Rams last week, you probably wouldn't have felt super great about it. If the game kind of went along the same way, they score 14 points in a dominant first quarter and then everything kind of fizzles apart there, you'd feel the same way. But it's easier to digest those types of things, it's easier to come up with, we've got to do this after mm-hmm. you get a win.
Sure.
So, yeah, they're having some struggles getting to the end zone for sure. But, again, it's a 17-game season, and they got to win. That's all that matters.
Yeah. I feel like it's just I went in going, they need to blow this team out.
Yeah.
They can't win 20-15 like the Cowboys did against the Giants, right?
So, no, I disagree. They can. You can do that. But, like, I'm not going to react either way to this because I was so goddamn annoyed last week when everybody was singing the praises of that jackass in New York and talking about how great the Jets are because they just beat the New England Patriots. They beat arguably the worst team in the entire league.
Yeah.
And then what did they do? They followed it up with an inability to get in the end zone. All of a sudden, when you don't have a free line to the quarterback anymore, football gets a little harder. So I'm not going to overpraise the San Francisco 49ers for beating the New England Patriots because I would refuse to overpraise what the New York Jets did last week.
Yeah.
But you win, you survive, and you keep moving. Their schedule is going to get a little bit tougher. They've got a lot more difficult games going on. I feel like what Jordan Mason was able to do in the second half of yesterday's game was really special. I feel like the fact that he's starting to catch passes out of the backfield is good. I know not everybody is happy with where Brandon Ayuk is, but the fact that Brandon Ayuk had a big play, the mm-hmm. fact that Debo had a big play, I feel like those are all really, really positive things. I think the fact that their defense was able to sustain without the most important defender to me, I think the fact that you finally got what you wanted from Nick Bosa, even though he didn't get his first sack till very late in the game, he was all over.
Yep.
That football game, and whether you do it against a bad offensive line or a bad football team doesn't really matter for the psyche because you've done it, and now you'll feel better going into next week's game.
Yeah. How worried are we about Fred Warner?
The fact that he had his helmet on and was like standing on the sidelines and like looked agitated, they wouldn't let him play, has me feeling pretty good.
And
about
they had him on social media after the game, and he's running off the field. Here's exactly how that felt to me. That felt like he went, "Hey, I want to play," and they went, "Well, we got the ball first here. Let's see how it goes."
Yep.
They fumble. They don't even have a chance to go on a drive. And they score, and the Niners immediately come back and go back up 17.
Yeah.
And that was like, hey, you know what?
Hey, we don't need you, big fella. Let's I know you want to play. You already had a stat line. Like, you had a game stat line in the first half.
Yes.
Let's start thinking about next week.
Yeah. That's exactly what I think. So I'm not
defensive player of the year front runner.
Oh, he might be my favorite player in the league right now. He's so really, really close
to it. And he looks dope. He looks so sick in a football uniform.
CJ, Jaden and Fred Warner, those are D'Lo's favorite player power rankings right there. They're all tied for one.
Lamar Jackson bumped out of the list. Wow,
bumped down. Yeah, oh. Your boy. That's like he's your top tier.
Yeah, that's my guy right
there. Lamar can be two. The rest of those guys are tied for one.
We gotta go here, but I gotta tell you, every time Lamar Jackson fumbles now, a little piece of me dies.
Oh, I know, me too.
I
come in later every time Lamar fumbles once because I don't want to. At least they're winning because I don't want to deal with some of our dear friends at the Odyssey.
You lost a little piece every time Jalen Hurts fumbled. You'd be dead already.
Wow.
Shout out Jalen Hurts.
That felt personal.
That felt really personal. Hey, you can't wait to watch Tyler Huntley tonight against Will Levis.
Shout out.
D'Lo and KC coming up next. NFL Kings Media Day.
Yeah. I really don't know, to be honest with you.
Carl Anthony Towns trade.
I'm on about 3 hours sleep, dude.
Hell yeah.
Five for the next 4 hours.
This is going to be so sick. Can't wait for D'Lo and KC. It's coming up next. Jesse Tapia filling in for James Hamm today. Appreciate you, Jesse. James out at Kings Media Day. We'll talk about that tomorrow. Back at 10 a.m. Tomorrow. Until then, drink water. Be nice, people. Bye.